Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to our talk tonight. It's a special guest call for our Energy Recharge Inner Circle, and I've invited my friend and colleague, Dr. Jim Otis, to talk to us about one of my favorite topics to really share, and one of the things that so many people have issues with, and it affects so many other things. It's really hard to get well. It's really hard to be optimized in your digestion, in your blood sugar, in your hormones, when you don't get the right sleep. And the way I look at it is there's three main problems that people have with sleep, and Dr. Jim may have many more, but one is not being able to fall asleep. Two is not being able to stay asleep. And three, not making it to the bedroom so that you have plenty of time to sleep. And I know people in this program that struggle with all of these or some of these. And the one about the time to get to bed is, you know, maybe not what we're going to focus on today. But what we're going to focus on today is some empowering information about the importance of sleep. So you, like me, when I read the book, Why We Sleep, got really engaged in, oh, this practice of not getting to bed in time has got to stop because of all the other impacts it's having on my body. So Dr. Jim Otis is a chiropractic neurologist. He has a specialty in handling people with post-traumatic brain injury. He works a lot with attention deficit disorder, depression, anxiety, and he uses some, you know, sleep techniques that are unique. And I wanted to share that with you guys because all of those things like play in together, right? And not sleeping enough doesn't let your brain get nourished, doesn't let your body get detoxified. And I'm going to let Dr. Jim take it away and tell you anything more that he feels useful about himself and his background that's going to lend itself to you guys listening to him. He is an authority. I highly respect him. And after he did a sleep call with our practitioner training, a couple of people who had had years of chronic sleep problems listened to the stuff he recommended and actually got their first good night's sleep in decades within a few days. So I'm excited to bring him back to talk to you guys, and we'll have time at the end to answer questions. So take it away, Dr. Jim Otis.
Awesome. It's just so fun to be here. I really enjoyed the practitioner training we did a while ago. I like the three questions. How do we fall asleep? How do we stay asleep? And then how do we get to bed? So Rita Marie and I chatted just a bit, and we had a couple of areas we want to cover. One is I'm going to talk about the importance of sleep. And we know it intuitively, but also there's some really striking research that shows how critical it is. It might be the single biggest factor, or certainly one of the single biggest factors for our long-term health. So we have this intuitive sense, one night of bad sleep, and we don't feel that good. We know that we feel groggy, irritable, whatever. There are lots of studies that one night of poor sleep, our memory is decreased the next day. We have a lower IQ the next day. We have reduced productivity. We have more inflammation. We have reduced ability to regulate our blood sugar. It goes on and on. And this is just not conjecture. There are so many studies that verify this. And then what gets really interesting is you stretch it out over a week or longer. So anytime you start getting consistently poor sleep for a period of time, it starts to become more serious. And so there's this interesting kind of sobering statistics that reduced sleep, and what we consider adequate is that means 7 hours or less. It, over a period of time, over a month or longer, doubles your risk of cancer. 1 week of moderately reduced sleep, i.e. 7 hours or less, can move you into a pre-diabetic range. And if you were previously healthy with your blood sugar regulating capacity. And so, and this is, again, like 17,000 studies showing just these statistics. And it's what we call an independent risk factor. So that means if you have poor sleep, no matter whether you exercise or smoke or don't smoke or eat a diet or a good diet or not good diet, as an independent factor, your quality of sleep, if it's poor, it will set you up. It'll increase your risk of Alzheimer's, heart disease, stroke, diabetes, obesity, depression, pain and inflammation. So it's huge. So I don't think we need to like go into this too much more, but I just want to like do the scare stuff first. The kind of the gravity of this is really important for me, for you, for your children, for your family, for your friends, for your patients. There's, again, it's nothing really much more important. And unfortunately, it is really prevalent. So 2/3 of people in the developed world do not get enough sleep. And again, that's defined as less than 7 hours a night. And there's even a higher percentage than 2/3 of children who do not get enough sleep. And so, you know, and so these big organizations, the CDC comes out and says, hey, this is an epidemic. We have an epidemic going on. The World Health Organization has similar kinds of warnings. This is a big deal. Rita Marie talked about, hey, you know, some of us have the issue of not making it into the bedroom, not prioritizing it to get to bed, to prioritize our sleep. So let's break that down just a little bit. So if we said that 2/3 of people in the developed adults don't get enough sleep, about 25% of that is voluntary. Mm-hmm. So that means we choose to stay up and work on a project, or, wow, the kids are asleep and we have our free time. We have our own me time and I can check social media or something like that. So that's 25% of the people in adults in the developed world. But that leaves, and we can, so that's what we're talking about today. Hopefully we are inspiring you to prioritize it for you and for your kids. And so, you know, it becomes incumbent upon us as people educated, as practitioners, to help let people know how important it is. And so we can reduce, it's pretty easy to reduce that 25%. Well, whatever. Let's work to educate people. So, anyway, 40% of it though. So these are people who want to get to sleep. These are those of us who make the time, we go to bed, we turn off the lights, we wind down, you know, like whatever it is that we do, we stop, you know, watching blue light, turn off our screens and all that kind of stuff. Still 40% of folks have trouble with sleep. So it's significant, even though they're making the time for it. And there's a couple of different, we're going to talk about some of the reasons for it. One is sleep hygiene. So, and we'll talk about that because it's really important, i.e. how you set up your lifestyle. But that's what I mean by sleep hygiene. And then a second reason, which we'll also cover, which is really important, is the physical changes in your brain that affect your ability to sleep. Before we get into that though, I want to talk about how does the average medical doctor or the medical practitioner address this? And typically it's with medications. And I want to put a really strong emphasis on this. It's not worth it in almost every situation. And so here's, you know, some of the reasons. One is that it's big studies. It's medications, sleep medications are no better than placebo. Just period. Mm-hmm. They just don't work. And on average, sleep medications provide an additional 11 minutes of sleep per night. So not huge. And there are side effects or problems that come with that. And the most prominent researcher who's done work with this is a doctor named Daniel Kripke. I believe he's MD, PhD, but he's a very prominent researcher. And his work, and this has been validated by more than a dozen other research groups around the world. He did a series of what's called matched cohort studies. And they looked at how many sleeping pills participant used and the overall death rate that they had over the next number of years. And they found that people who take 1 to 18 pills per year, that's once every 3 weeks or less, are 3.8, almost 4 times more likely to die in the next 2.5 years. And these are our patients. These are our friends. These are our family members. People who are taking, you know, sleeping pills. They're especially the benzodiazepines. So that it's a big deal. And again, this has been replicated like all over the, by lots of research groups around the world. And that increased death rate is due to a lot of factors. And we'll talk a little bit more about this, and then we'll get into the, you know, how do you actually deal with it? How do you, you know, improve your sleep, and your family's sleep? And some of those factors are the sleeping pills affect your immune. They help, they tend to impair their immune system. They tend to dysregulate the brain's ability to clear toxins at night. And that kind of thing. So what happens during sleep in your brain? There are very unique changes in your brain that occur during sleep and no other time of the day. And one of those changes is that there's an increased lymphatic drainage from your brain. And so like every tissue, every part of your body, it gets a blood supply. There's fresh blood coming to it, and then stale blood is taken away. And then part of the toxin removal mechanism in our body is our lymphatic system, which drains away debris and toxins and things that have metabolic poisons that have built up during the day, or byproducts that have built up during the day. And yes, I see somebody writing in lymphatic. That is the name of the lymphatic drainage system around the brain. And during sleep, during deep sleep, there's 10 times increased drainage and twice the removal of toxins. So, and here's what happens. You go through your day and you're thinking and acting and being active, and you build up these metabolic byproducts, including things like beta amyloid and these protein residues that can accumulate in your brain and contribute to the development of every neurodegenerative disease there is. Including Alzheimer's. And that's why it's just so crucial to have good deep sleep. And again, every neurodegenerative disease, which is kind of my, one of the things that I'm really passionate about, is accelerated and facilitated by the lack of poor sleep. So let's go through, we talked about this extensively in the training that we did with the practitioner group. We'll talk a bit about it here. And so when you're sleeping, there's these whole host of different things that happen. There's this process of physical changes in your brain, not just the drainage, but also how the synapses work, that make it possible for you to learn and remember things. If you really need good sleep in order to learn effectively, it's not worth it to cram for a test. It kind of backfires because it's harder to remember the next day. Here's one piece with immune system, just some four examples. So during deep sleep, it activates a part of your immune system called the innate immune system. And if you restrict deep sleep, you know, like we're talking about 7 hours or less, then you get 70% fewer natural killer cells the next day. So that leaves you more vulnerable to colds. And over a long term, it leaves you more vulnerable to cancer. And then during the REM sleep, a different part of the sleep cycle, it activates a different part of your immune system called the acquired immunity, the TH2 part wing of the immune system, if you know that. So that's immune regulation. Let's talk just a little bit about blood sugar regulation. There's one night, again, if you're just, you probably noticed that if you, for some reason, get a short night of sleep, you're up late, then you have to wake up early for work, you're likely to be more hungry the next day. And that's because you have poor blood sugar regulation. And again, just one week of sleep restriction, you're going to move into a pre-diabetic condition. You get all the markers in your blood of somebody who's pre-diabetic. So here's another big concept that I want to make sure you understand, especially those of you as parents, but all of us. We think that we have a longer leash than we do. in terms of sleep. And we think, okay, I'm going to push and I'm deprive myself of sleep for this week while I'm really pushing on a work project or something like that. Mm-hmm. It is really difficult to make up a sleep deficiency. It's not just getting a good night's sleep for the next week. The sleep deficiency leaves a mark, and you can eventually repay the debt, but it's a lot more work than preventing it in the first place. And I want to illustrate with that with some examples. So kids at age 3 who don't get good sleep, they are 45% more likely to be obese 4 years later. It's just stunning that there are these developmental windows in the development of a child's brain that if you deprive or somehow impair the brain development during that window, it has a long-term consequence. And young adults, teenagers who have poor sleep have worse memory as older adults. And that is independent of what happens in between. So they can start getting good sleep, when they're in middle age, but they're still way more likely to have worse memory since they had poor sleep as a young adult. So it's kind of, I use the word sobering. And we see that just a week of a moderate sleep deficiency, you can measure the immunological footprint, the fallout of that in your immune system 1 year later. So anyway, okay, I think we've done enough it's important. It's really important. And we talked about adults, 75% of children don't get enough sleep. And here's a really important piece that we need to educate our friends who are parents. And that is that 75% of children don't get enough sleep, but only 30% of children, 30% of parents think their children are not getting enough sleep. So there's a way that parents aren't understanding how important it is for their children to get good sleep. And regular sleep time, which we'll talk about a little bit later, is for children. So a regular bedtime for children is one of the most robust predictors of their overall health and well-being. Okay, so let's shift gears and talk about, well, how do we get good sleep? So that I think that's what everybody is wanting. There's two major pieces that I want to talk about today, and that is we're going to talk about establishing regular lifestyle rhythms. And then we're going to also talk about how to help your brain reboot its rhythms. And everything in life, works on the basis of rhythms. So there are rhythms happening everywhere. Rest activity. There are rhythms. One of the most basic is the daily rhythm, day and night. And then there are monthly rhythms with the moon. There are annual rhythms with the sun. And this affects all forms of life, from algae to humans. It affects every organ of our body, from our brain, of course, to our liver and our intestines and our skin. There are periods of rest and activity that follow. And right now, let's talk 24 hours. The Chinese map this out. I mean, some of you, I'm sure, are familiar with Chinese medicine, and they talk about, the liver is active at this time of day, the large intestine at this time of day. But we look at cortisol rhythms and melatonin rhythms, and they go high and low in a predictable way. And when those rhythms are really important for our health, they need to be synchronized and harmonized. And we can do that with our lifestyle. So we are in tune, whether we like it or not, basically it's a good thing, with the rhythms of nature around us. We are diurnal animals. So we are designed to be awake during the day and sleep at night. And and we can harness those rhythms. So first of all, a regular rhythm is probably the most important. And that is going to bed at a predictable time. And we talked about that with kids, and it's the same thing holds for adults. And I think I saw someone in the chat, talking about, just a 1 hour difference in sleep time makes a difference. So there's this phenomenon called social insomnia or social insomnia. But it involves we have to wake up during the week with an alarm clock, then we let ourselves sleep in on the weekend. And so we go to bed at a different time and wake up at a different time. And what will tend to happen when we do that, though, is that we're more inflamed on the days when we shift the rhythm. It's hard on our body. We know it's sometimes hard. We experience it as jet lag. When we travel across time zones and we have to shift our rhythm, we feel a little bit off. There are 2 days of each year where we know with absolute certainty, we can predict there's going to be more morbidity, mortality, more deaths, more hospital admittances, more ER visits than any other day of the year. And those 2 days are the days when we shift daylight savings time. It's daylight savings time. It's just that 1 hour shift in those states that still do it. And there's some areas that are working to not have that daylight savings time anymore, but it has a cost. It has an effect on our health. So at any rate, this is all just a way of saying it's really good to have a regular sleep rhythm. Go to bed at the same time, wake up at the same time. And of course, you're going to go out and, party on some weekends, but just know, value it. It's an important thing. That's one way to help our circadian rhythms, to tune ourselves with the external environment. So there are these energy ebbs and flows throughout the environment, that we sense, that our body senses. There's a really cool study that they did with clams and their response to rhythms. And in this case, it was the gravitational field of the Earth and the Moon. And what they did, they took clams out of the Long Island Sound, and the clams open and close with the daily rhythm. And they put them in, they flew them to Chicago, and put them in the basement somewhere, and they started opening and closing, with the tides as they would be in Chicago. So the basic point here is that we all are entrained with or influenced by environmental rhythms, and it's good to establish, to go with that flow rather than to fight it. So some of the ways we can go with that are to have a regular bedtime. Another one is to support the rhythms of these two hormones, cortisol and melatonin, which you've talked about earlier in your work here with Rita Marie. So as you know, melatonin goes up at night, and especially with dark, and cortisol goes up during the day. And so some of the sleep tools, sleep hygiene that you've probably heard about is you want to reduce screen time in the before bed, because the melatonin is very sensitive to the color and amount of light in the environment. And during our natural day, the amount of blue light is highest in the middle of the day. And then towards sunset, and then again at sunrise, the light in the sky gets more reddish. And so that red frequency tunes our brain differently than the blue frequency. And so there are these screen shifting, color shifting things that I imagine most of you are using, where you can put it on your computer and it has redder light. It'll can change the display or on your phones. And those are good. Those are really good. And just avoiding, having the lights dimmer at night. that can be one really important part of sleep hygiene. And then
it, glasses, when, the blue light blocking glasses.
Yeah. And that's another. And then another way that you can do this is to just look at our natural physiology during the day. And generally, we'll take advantage of our body temperature. So our body temperature tends to go up and down. And you might have talked about already getting your basal metabolic temperature. Your temperature is usually lowest right when you first wake up. And then you can use that to assess how your hormones are working and a whole group of different things. But your body temperature goes down at night. So it's very helpful to facilitate that in your sleep environment. So one little trick is sleep in a cool room. So, you know, make it cool. You'll sleep better. Then also your body, you can be on alert. If you're feeling stressed, that will interfere with sleep. And so one way to decrease the potential environmental intrusion is to sleep, to make it quiet in your room. Make sure you have a quiet, cool environment. You can use noise blocking kinds of, white noise or pink noise is even better. It's just a type of noise that helps screen out the noise in the rest of your house. Those are some tricks in terms of setting up the sleep hygiene. Anybody any questions before I move on? And then we're going to talk about brain plasticity.
The only other one I would mention, because we talk about this a lot, is the importance of not eating within 3 hours of bedtime.
Yeah.
If you concur with that.
Yeah. Okay, well, yes. And then let's, I think this is a great time, Rimri, to go into the some of the eating strategies. Well, yeah basically, I'd say yes, it is. You give your digestive system a rest, and then it won't be working as hard and it's easier to get to sleep. And there'd be one possible exception to that, and that is, in my experience, and that is people who have a hard time staying asleep. That can be due to a hypoadrenic situation. So or hypocortisol would be another way of saying it. If your cortisol drops at night, then your blood sugar drops. And then your body is, and that's stressful for your brain. And then your brain will compensate by releasing adrenaline that can get your blood sugar up, but it also has the consequence of waking you up. So people who wake up in the middle of the night, that can be an issue. And so in that case, what we want to do is stabilize your blood sugar. And there's a lot of ways to do that. One of which is to eat smaller, frequent meals. And that might include a bedtime snack that has enough protein in it that can carry you, in fat in it, that can carry you through the night. So that would be one possible exception. And I suggest to people, just experiment and see. And you'll get feedback. Does that make sense?
Frequent meals doesn't necessarily, but I have found that some people need to do that at bedtime, but it's a Band-Aid, right?
Yeah, it is.
Band-Aid while you're working on fixing the real underlying.
Exactly, balance. Exactly. So, yes. Okay, so then let's go to what happens in our brain. So anytime we're having a hard time sleeping, we're falling, and it's been going on for a while, there's almost certainly some changes in our brain. Our brains are very plastic, so they adapt. They adapt to the stress load that we put on them that are keeping us awake. And we're and basically the sympathetic nervous system has become overactive and it just can't shift off. And so I want to talk a little bit about stress as I see it. Stress isn't bad. Right? We need to be able to mount a stress response. And a stress response means we activate the resources, our physiological resources, to deal with a challenge. So exercise is a form of stress. When we go out and, you know, I like to run. I like to go out and do interval training. And I'll get my heart rate up really high. I'll get it up to 170, whatever. You know, for me as a 66-year-old, that's fairly high. And that is a form of stress, but then I rest. And so we want flexibility in our nervous system. We want to be able to really activate the sympathetic nervous system for short periods of time, but then to turn it off. And then we want to be able then to go into parasympathetic mode, in the rest and digest part of our part of our brain function for the majority of the time. So we want the flexibility, the neurological, the metabolic flexibility. And so what happens when, for a lot of people who are having a hard time falling asleep, and then also staying asleep, it is that the sympathetic nervous system is not turning off. We're, you know, we feel exhausted, we feel tired, but we're wired and we can't fall asleep. And so that's a neurological problem. That's it's not the problem in our adrenal glands. It's our brain telling the adrenal glands it's not shifting gears. And so we want to shift that. And then one of the things we're going to talk about, the brain tying technology that I've developed, it can be really good at helping that. So the main point here is that if you're having a hard time falling asleep, and especially if you're doing the right things, you're going to bed on time, you're doing the right sleep hygiene, and you're still having a hard time going to sleep, oh my goodness, it's common. It's so common. There's an issue in your brain, and we need to shift the functioning in your brain. And the most fundamental way to do that is by shifting how our brain, the rhythms in our brain. So our brains operate in this rest and activity format. We've talked about a circadian, kind of daily rhythm in our brain. But the rhythms are happening like many on a millisecond basis. And so, for example, you've heard of alpha waves and beta waves. Those are just rhythms that are happening many times a second. You know, an alpha wave might be 10 cycles per second. The nerve cells are on and off 10 times a second. And beta waves are faster, and delta waves in sleep or deep sleep are slower. But the point is that these rhythms are turning on and off, and these rhythms have to work well. So every message in our brain, if we're going to get a message from one part of my brain to another part of my brain, the timing has to be precise or it doesn't get through. So the messages in our brain, there's an electrical pulse that then stops and it turns on and off. And if it's timed to the millisecond, and if the timing is off, the message doesn't get through and our brain doesn't work. And we can be stuck in a sympathetic nervous system mode, or we can have a hard time remembering words, or we can have problems orienting ourselves in space. They can be like anything the brain does; it can be compromised. So, the one way to reset that is with a pulsed sounds that stimulate our brain, remind it of its inherent rhythms and help it work better. And that's Rima, you were talking about with your some of your practitioners who got good results. That is this technology. It's called Brain Time. And maybe what I'd like to do is talk just a little bit more about how I developed it. And then we'll listen to a sound. And then also I'm going to give you guys, as part of Rita Marie's group, a month of access to it so you can experience it. As Rita Marie said, my primary focus in practice is brain injuries. And I got into it because my wife had a brain injury, my first wife, back 38 years ago, a while ago, had a brain injury and she couldn't talk. And so we were in this format of a condition where we went everywhere. to, you know, we had the MRIs, we did the speech language therapy, the PT, the OT, the acupuncture, craniosacral, you name it. And it didn't do the trick. And you know, some of it helped for a period, but it didn't really stick very well. And that just set my career. I was a new doctor. I was getting as many resources for her and relying on all my colleagues as best we could, and we couldn't help her. So that kind of was very formative for me. And I got into functional neurology, studying with people around the world to do that. And then I started treating people with brain injuries. That became my specialty. And then in that context, developed something to help the timing for brain timing for people with brain injuries. And then we kind of backed into it by accident. Noticed that people were getting better sleep. We weren't looking for it, but people with brain injuries were getting better sleep. And then other people, you know, non-brain injury people were getting better sleep. So anyway, and the way that it works is you listen through headphones through sounds that are, they're little beep sounds that are timed to the millisecond. And that helps to remind your brain about how its natural inherent rhythms should be working. And it's just such a gentle, like, kind of homeopathic reminder. And my thought is I'd like to have you listen to that right now. I'm going to do the best I can to play it so you can hear it. And what you're going to find is there's a lot of quiet between these sounds. And they're very irregular, and some are fast and some are slow, and each different part it's designed to, and we have a patent on it, how to improve your brain. Okay, so let's see here. Were people able to hear that?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Good, good, good. So that was a little bit of a taste of how that sounds. When you're really listening to it, you have on headphones. And each of those different sounds is in only one ear or the other, and it's shifting back and forth. And that shifting pattern, the unilateral pattern of it and shifting back and forth, is what helps build the communication patterns between the different parts of your brain. So, great. So that's what that is. And again, what it's been a really interesting process in terms of this is a very generalizable way to help your brain. And so when something, your brain is so fundamental to so many different things, this has a really wide range of possible benefits that we get reports on a lot. And one is like kids, you know, having better behavior control, like parents saying, hey, my kids are more cooperative. We get out, it's easier getting out the door in the morning. Or seniors saying, I'm remembering words more easily. Or balance. We've done some interesting balance plate assessments, these computerized balance assessments. So it has a generalized effect. And one of the ways that is most helpful is it helps a lot of people with sleep. And so the way that you use it is you put on the headphones and you listen through headphones for 5 minutes twice a day. And it's just, again, a little reminder about for your brain about how it works. And then Rita Marie and I have, and I believe you already sent a link to people.
I just put it in the chat as well.
We offer this as a subscription. And so it's a $29 a month subscription that includes access to the sounds that you just heard. And there are sounds, we have slightly different variations on this, for focus and relaxation and sleep and then reducing, building resilience. So there's a number of different trainings that you can listen to. It's all basically the same kind of format where you listen through headphones for a short period of time, a couple times a day. And then there's all, we also have an audio library with a lot of information about practical ways to build your brain. So to help sleep and to help learning skills and to help memory and a whole group of different things above and beyond the, you know, the sleep piece. And there's a number of different presentations about sleep as well, in addition to what, you know, like what we're doing here. So any rate, Rita Marie, do you have a way to show people that link or do I just want to make sure everybody has that ability to do that?
Yep. And we've sent it out in the emails, but if you look in the chat, I put it there. Ignore the first one. I spelled my name wrong, but we put a shortcut link to it on the website. I was wondering about timing. Is it something that if somebody is having sleep issues, are we going to do it like right before sleep, a couple of hours before sleep? Does it matter whether it's difficulty falling asleep versus staying asleep, what the timing would be?
That's a really good question. And that's a really good point. So it reminds me of I forget, Paul, one of the participants here was asking, is this going to put us asleep? Okay. We do have a training called sleep. And what it is, it's heavy in some of the slower rhythms. And what will happen, these sounds are building flexibility in your brain. So it allows your brain to shift speeds and to sync with different parts. That's the flexibility that we need. So you can listen to the sleep program during the day. It won't put you to sleep, but it builds your capacity to shift gears when it's time to shift from waking to sleeping or mm-hmm. sleeping to waking. So generally what we say, Rita Marie, is spread it out during the day. Do 5 or 10 minutes in the morning, 5 or 10 minutes during the evening. Some people do listen if they wake up in the middle of the night, listen to especially the sleep program, And it helps them get back to sleep. So you can, the timing is not crucial. You don't have to do it right before sleep. But what we want is a flexible brain that has the capacity to shift gears. Mm. So, and you can do that, you know, anytime during the day. We recommend spreading it out. A lot of the neurological rehab procedures that we do these little small kinds of interventions. Short interventions, but multiple times a day. And in this case, we found just over the years that 5 or 10 minutes morning and evening separated by at least an hour is good. And it can be better to do 5 minutes, 10 times a day, but there is diminishing returns. Mm-hmm. The steepest, biggest bang for your buck is with those first two and yeah, but 3 and 4, they'll help, you know, more, but just a couple times a day is great.
So if you don't get the help that you're looking for with twice a day, you're saying that do it 2 more times a day.
Yeah, you could.
But
you could.
If you go higher than that, it seems like it really isn't going to give much return. Is that what I heard?
Yeah, less return. And there's no harm in going more. It's just, you know, and they're pleasant to listen to. So when you listen to these things, it should be a pleasant experience. So. Mm-hmm. And that would be like the one like expectation. It should be a pleasant experience. Every now and then, you know, if somebody has a fragile brain, it can be too much stimulation. And in which case, it would be like doing too much exercise and you're sore. Mm-hmm. And you might feel like a little bit, you know, like not, it's usually just, it starts to be irritating. I don't want that anymore. So it should be a pleasant experience. That's the one, you know, like the major guideline to use. And if it's not, just back it off and instead of 5 minutes, do 1 minute and just build it up slowly. It's actually exercise for your brain. We're stimulating what we call oscillatory phase resets in your brain. So it's a form of rehab or exercise. Did that answer your question?
That was totally answered my question. Yes.
Great. Great, great, great.
Perfect. No.
Cool. Okay. So some of the questions that we get the most are, one is, how long until I get results? Mm. And sometimes like some of like a couple of the practitioners in the call we did this spring, and I think it was February or January, mm-hmm. You know, had these decade long problems and they got results in 1 or 2 days. Mm-hmm. And that's not unusual. It's not like the most common, you know, it's not, but it's not unusual either. Mm-hmm. So you can get results really fast. And I could tell you some really cool examples, a lot of examples where people got results really fast. It's more likely though that the results, most people notice results within a month. And so what happens is when you listen to this, it causes changes in your brain. And we have some really cool EEG studies that show that 5 minutes of listening to this has a really significant reorganization on the brain. And for the first time somebody's ever listened to it, listen for 5 minutes and there's profound changes in the brain. Now that affects the brain, and then the effects wear off a little bit, and then you reinforce it. So you keep, you know, and so in essence, these, it's like going to the gym. You go exercise and you don't usually get fit. And, you know, like the first day you're there, you just repeat it. You know, you go to the gym and you build a little muscle and, you know, lose a little fat. And then you repeat that over and over and over. And then within a month, you start to notice the difference. It's kind of like that with this. So how long does it usually take to notice results? Usually we say a month. So I'm going to give everybody a month here so you can notice the results. And then another question a lot of people have is, well, what happens if I miss, you know, I get busy. What happens if I miss a session? And doesn't matter. I like that going to the gym analogy. You go to the gym and you work out and it's good. And then if you miss a day, you just go the next day. So I recommend twice a day. If you miss it, just pick it up the next day and do it the next day. Another common question we get is it good for kids? And yeah, absolutely. It can be great for kids. And there's a number of ways that, depending on the age of your child, but it can be really great for young children. And what I'd suggest with that is, for those of you, young children, you can just have the child sit in your lap and put on the headphones and put it at a quiet volume and just read a book or draw or something like that. They don't have to be focused on the sound. You just get it in there while they're eating breakfast. There's some advantage as an adult, you know, to actually sitting and closing your eyes and listening to it. Because what you pay attention to, what you attend, adds neuroplastic oomph. It'll change your brain faster, but it's not necessary. I often listen while I'm doing my email. So the question we often get is, does it work for kids? Yes. And then just make it comfortable. You know, one great thing with kids is exchange massage. Hey, let's do a foot massage. You both of you put on your headphones and listen to Brain Time and exchange a foot massage. It can be a lot of like benefits with that, just like quality, like parent-child interaction. Mm-hmm. Other common questions that I get are, can I download a copy? And right now we have it online. We're working on getting an app. We don't have it yet. So right now you access through the internet. And we don't have a download option because we update these things frequently enough that we shift the sounds. So you just heard a variety of some sounds there. You might hear that on our website, but then 10 days later, it would be slightly different. And it's like shifting up your exercise routine. When you go to the gym, you get better results if you cross train just a little bit. So it's the same basic algorithms and the same patented, you know, thing that we do, but we just shift it up a little bit. I'm just trying to remember all the different questions that are frequent here. And then if anybody has questions, of course, I'll answer them. Any potential negative effects in that it should be pleasant. And then if it's not pleasant, just stop listening.
Marilyn asked about balance, that you briefly mentioned that it can help balance issues. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. So in terms of balance, Marilyn, there can be a lot of causes of poor balance. And maybe later, if we have access, you know, we can unmute you and I could hear more. But just in general, there can be a lot of causes of poor balance. And one could be a problem with inner ear, the balance part of your ear. And sometimes if people have had a concussion, which I work with it a lot, that can get messed up. And then also, but you've had the experience, it's harder to balance if your eyes are closed. So we use visual input to keep our balance. It's also harder to balance if we don't have good sensory perception from our feet. So for example, if you want to try a science experiment with your kid, or you, whatever, put your feet in ice water. Just numb your feet and try standing up and keeping your balance. It's harder. So it's harder to balance on one foot, for example, if you've numbed your feet, or harder to balance if your eyes are closed. So in essence, we get feedback from a lot of different parts of our body, from our eyes, from our feet, from our inner ear, from our neck, from our kidneys. It's really interesting. But our brain takes these different sources of balance information and combines them together in order to get a sense of what's happening, where I am in space. And so that combining of information from visual, sensory, inner ear, that takes this precisely timed messaging. And so that brain time can really help with that. And I'll just say a little bit more about that. This is illustrating a general point. And that is that our brain, every function is that there's a bunch of different parts that are coordinating to that function. So if I'm walking down the street and I see Rita Marie on the other side of the street, I recognize Rita Marie with the right side of my brain. And then I remember her name with the left side of my brain. And I remember the context in which we last interacted in a different part of my brain. And we've all, I'm guessing all of us have had the experience of we're walking down the street and we see somebody and, oh my goodness, I just can't remember their name. And then 5 minutes later, it comes to us. And what's happening in that scenario is a breakdown of what we call functional connectivity. And so we need, in order to have a complete memory or complete balance or complete learning or whatever, we have to coordinate these different parts of our brain. So we have to be able to synchronize right and left parts of our brain that recognize a face and recognize and remember the name so we can have that complete memory in the moment. That synchronizing of these different areas is entirely timing dependent. And what we're doing with this, with the brain time, it's a physiological way of stimulating flexibility in our brain with those shifting rhythms that then helps the different parts of the brain synchronize and then break synchrony when they're supposed to be breaking synchrony. That's why it can help so many different things like memory. I mean, how does something help both sleep and memory and, you know, balance? It's because it's like a general tune-up for the brain. Did that answer your question, Marilyn?
Let's see what she's
saying. Thanks, Dr. Otis. Yes, it did. Because I do think as we've aged, definitely, I mean, I'll just quickly say I'm a sailor. I used to, go on long wilderness kind of hikes that were off trails away in the bush in British Columbia. And, I could walk on logs to get across different areas. And I had great balance. But as I aged, I found that I was losing my balance. Yeah. Now sometimes I tend to sort of pull to my left side a bit. Yeah. No, nothing else going on. I'm fine. And then it corrects with a massage sometimes, yeah, and it goes away. So I don't know if it's internal organs or what, but I'm fine right now. But a week or two ago, I'd be standing, but I'd feel like I'd be leaning or pulling to my left all the time.
Yeah. So that's not uncommon. I mean, I see that frequently. And the brain time will help to a degree. And I believe, Marilyn, it'll just give you like more resilience so that kind of experience of pulling to the left is would happen less frequently than it has until now. And then you found that it corrects with the massage. And so there's one example of feedback from your body that's affecting your brain. And there's... And that's good, and that happens a lot. And if you, if it's still problematic, you might want to find somebody who's really trained with functional neurology, and they can get even more specific for you to help the feedback into the part of the system that this, that's starting to get a little bit short circuity for you. And you just ask Rita Marie or your contact me, and I, and we can get you a locator link for people who are trained with that. It's kind of like people are trained in functional medicine. And you know, which is what you're getting a lot of here. There's also people who are trained in functional neurology, which is kind of like a cousin of that. That's really good for precisely getting, you know, helping people with balance. That's one of the things, like the issue that you're talking about. And, you know, it sounds like you're really functional right now, and, you know, may it continue to be so.
Yeah, no, I'm fine. But I have noticed as I've aged, it's not just the pull. The pull's more recent, but, you know, just balance. Just like, yeah. I never had a problem walking across a log, or anything, you know, you just kind of walk. But now, you know, it just, the balance isn't quite the same. And part of his age, I'm sure, of some sort.
Yeah, part of it is. It tends to you know, get to deteriorate with age. So I have a couple suggestions if you'd like. One is, start exercising your balance if you're not already. And that is practice standing on one leg.
With my eyes closed in the shower.
It's more safe. You know, and usually I tell people, eyes closed, you know, you just find your edge. You know, so one leg, if that's easy, eyes closed. And you just, you know, stand near a wall where you can just put one finger to stabilize yourself on the wall. And just kind of work your edge. And if it's harder on your left side, practice on your left side. And then what I would also suggest with that, Marilyn, is do that while you're listening to Brain Time. It'll actually help those results go faster. Mm-hmm. So when we're rehabbing stroke patients and other folks and we give them exercises like that, the way that helps your brain work better, you know, improves your balance, is it helps make new connections. It strengthens new connections because you're exercising them, but you're asking those connections to work better by, you know, doing the balance stuff. And you can build those connections better, faster, if you help your brain be flexible with its timing. So,
thank you.
So that would be the thing. Just practice it and then do it with Brain Time.
Mm-hmm. Tell me, thank you.
Give me some report back. I'd love to hear it.
Yeah. Sounds awesome. What do you think of like a Bosu ball? Like it's a half ball.
It's awesome.
Stand on it. That helps as well.
Totally. Anything that is challenging your brain and all of those unstable surfaces, the Bosu ball and whatever, wobble boards, all that stuff, they're really good. They're putting a demand on your brain. It's so, the balance system is so fundamental to our nervous system. It's one of the things that developed really early. And you just think about it. Evolutionarily, we went from quadrupeds, which have don't have a lot as many balance demands as a biped. Mm-hmm. And so it takes a lot of brain power. That's one of the things that drove the growth of our brain. Is going to become bipedal, and it took a lot of balance computing power. For a while, it was really hard to make robots bipedal robots. It was way easier to do quadrupedal, four-legged robots because it was so much less computing power. I mean, now we have bipedal robots, but it's just, it really does a lot for our brain. And here's another thing. You know, a lot of our patients and clients have anxiety. Or digestive issues. And you know what is really interesting? From a lot of that can be driven by problems with balance. And so you think about, you know, you can go on a roller coaster and feel nauseated. And that's just the, you know, some percentage of people do. And that's an example of your balance system firing. It's right in a part of your brain. It'll fire into the, you know, these vagal systems in your brain. And people feel nauseated. They can't. Or anxious. And that's one of the biggest ways that subclinical issues with balance show up is anxiety. So anyway, it's just, Bosu balls are awesome. So that's, you know, like I am a big fan of any balance, you know, kinds of exercise stimulation.
Love that. What you said about the remembering, you know, forgetting names.
Yes.
Do you see a connection with that with sleep? Because what I find is and I haven't made the exact correlation, but sometimes you said I see a person and I can remember their face and I can remember when the last time I saw them was, and their name is like out the window.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's even one night, Rita Marie, of poor sleep. It's like you have an impaired IQ. Your IQ is lower the next day. Yeah. Your memory is worse. Your productivity is worse. And that's not just you. That stuff is, you can measure that stuff, and it's in all kinds of studies. Yeah, like sleep absolutely affects memory. And then when it gets bad long term, you know, it's one of the major risk factors for Alzheimer's. So like one night causes an issue, prolonged, it causes a real issue. Yeah.
And I would say too, with the blood sugar, I experienced that personally when I first started teaching blood sugar, had no idea I had a blood sugar issue. Why would I eat so well? I exercise, I do all this stuff. Yeah. And then when I saw it, it was like, oh, I always thought I was immune to needing sleep. So I was going on 3 or 4 hours of sleep a night for years on end.
Yeah.
And not really feeling the impact outwardly.
Yeah.
Until I realized and started doing the research and realized, oh my gosh, that's why my blood sugar is off. So I can eat more carbs if I've had a series of, you know, a couple of weeks of really good sleep. But once I start to get bad again, then pineapple is out the window.
Yeah. Boy, I can share that experience.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, that memory thing, because I was like, I hope I'm not developing, you know, Alzheimer's, but then again, that's related to blood sugar, which is related to the sleep. So
it's all these cycles. Yeah. They're all related.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. See if there are other questions. Marcia put up the link to the BOSU. Thank you. I love it because I've always had kind of, you know, wobbly bounce. I've never been a ballerina or some of those things. And so once I started using the BOSU, just get on it with, you know, do some bicep curls or do some exercises on it that normally would be easy on the ground. It's a little bit more difficult
when
you stand up there, and it makes a huge difference in your overall balance.
Yeah. It's awesome. Okay.
The other question I had was related to brain trauma. Mm-hmm. Do you see long-term effects of brain trauma in terms of people later in life having sleep? Like maybe they had an accident when they were a kid and, you know, bad concussion, whatever, but then don't connect it necessarily to the brain waves being off and then having difficulty with sleep later in life.
Yes. Yeah. And so Rita Marie, there's both short-term and long-term sleep consequences of brain injuries. So short-term, it's like, it's just really common. People either sleep way more, they have a big increased need for sleep, or their sleep gets erratic. They can't, you know, they wake up, they have a hard time falling asleep. It's just really, really, really common. And then a lot of immunological sleep, a lot of issues persist post-concussion years, like decades. So it's the concussion, I mean, we can go into the physiology of that sometime, but it always leaves some degree of imprint, and our job is to clean it up as best as we can. And in terms of, you know, a lot of, if we've got into practical stuff about how to help, it's just crucial. You know, one aspect of that is quelling inflammatory consequences in the brain. So that's the injuries set up an inflammatory cascade, which then further damages the brain. You know, any kind of, you know, especially nutritional stuff that can cross the blood-brain barrier, and quell inflammatory stuff is good.
Yeah. Yeah. Question from Mahela. The impact on focus. How does brain time affect focus?
So, and again, it's one of these things. We want to be able to focus. It's kind of like we want to be able to mount a stress response and then turn it off. We want to be able to focus. Then also we want to be able to relax and tune in our environment. So, and we have these brain mechanisms to stop. Okay, I'm not going to pay attention to what's going on around me, and I'm just going to focus. And then we have a brain mechanism in which we're more open to peripheral stimuli. And that's all flexibility in our brain. And they literally involve different visual pathways in our brain, different auditory pathways. We need to be able to shift the functioning of our brain. We want a flexible brain. And so, yes, there's an increasing number of kids and adults who are being diagnosed with ADHD, i.e. it's difficult to stay focused. And that is, it involves an overactivation of some parts of the brain and underactivation of another. And we have a lot of really good results with people with focus. In fact, we have one autistic doctor in Singapore who had just remarkable success with brain time. He's using it with a lot of his clients who have a hard time with focus. Did I answer your question on that one?
Yeah, Mahela, let us know if you want more with that. But I think that answered it. As far as I'm concerned, I'm looking back to see if there are any others.
Yeah, that answered it. Thank you.
Great.
Yeah. I love that you're offering, an explanation of how this works, because I wasn't remembering that explanation, because people say, how does it work? I'm like, oh, I'm not sure. Let's listen to what Dr. Jim has to say. But that rhythm, that like retraining it to go into that flexibility between the different kinds of waves.
Yeah.
Right. And knowing how to go into the deep delta waves.
Yeah.
So we can get deep restorative.
You know, what's really cool, Rita Marie, that just on a, like this second by second piece. So we have like a brain cell, my brain cell sitting here is on, off, on, off. And that's happening 10 times a second. Mm-hmm. And there's another brain cell on the other side of my brain going on, off, on, off. And that's happening 10 times a second. Now, if they want to talk with each other, they've got to both be on at the same time and off at the same time, or else it's just the messages won't go. And so when two neurons, two different parts of my brain, right and left side, let's say, want to talk with each other, they synchronize. And then when they're done talking, they stop synchronizing. And another group of neurons shift. So the patterns, these patterns, shifting patterns of coherent neurons that is totally task dependent, depending on what we're doing, what we're thinking, what we're feeling, what, blah, blah, blah. These things are shifting around by millisecond by millisecond. And that's called a functional connection. And so there are hardwired connections. It's like there's a telephone wire that goes from my house to your house. But we're not always talking on the phone. And so it's not functionally active except part of the time. And so one of the biggest new areas of neurological research is called functional connectivity. And it has to do with the timing if the different parts of the brain can't shift gears. So it's almost like, we're dancing and we're a little bit off rhythm. And then when we come together, we establish the same rhythm. So we have to shift our rhythm a little bit. And so it's going along, blah, 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 blah. And then it has to shift, slow down or speed up a little bit in order to match up with another neuron. That's that flexibility.
Yeah.
And then the connections shift. They're flexible. So there's flexibility. It's what we call an oscillatory phase reset is the technical name for it. And we're just physiologically exercising that. And you heard how those rhythms are going to speed up and slow down. We're just exercising that flexibility. It's really cool.
I have another question related to folks who, like I've been there and I'm working it backwards in terms, but some people who they're just used to going to bed at 3 or 4 in the morning and they just don't get tired until that time. And then they're off all day long and they can't, and if they can't sleep in, then they're exhausted. Is there a way that you've found to be effective to just shift that back? Is it just like, do it partially or slowly, or skip a night's sleep? This is what I read one time, skip a night's sleep. And then you go to bed at 9 or 10 o'clock that night, or the night time you want. Like, is there a practical way, or is it unique to each person?
I think there's a couple things that are coming to my mind. One is it's a voluntary thing, and other people who are working shift work, it's not really voluntary unless you leave your job. For the shift work crowd, I think the biggest thing is to just keep it consistent. Don't resist the temptation to do a different rhythm on the weekend than during the week. It's like governments in the EU are now calling, they're offering these special kind of care for people who have to work shift work, and it's an occupational hazard, and, you know, blah, 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 increased risk of everything because of the shifting schedule. So, and again, I would prioritize keeping it consistent. So, you know, if it's 3 o'clock every morning, it's 3 o'clock every morning. Just do it.
But if you're not a shift worker, like assuming.
Otherwise, I don't have like a whole lot of, you know, I think I would just work with a person and, you know, maybe, you know, shift an hour a week or, you know, do it, you know, something like that. I don't know. So.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just thinking in terms of shift workers, like at least throughout the week, they know they're going to be working from midnight till six or whatever that time is, and they have a consistent time. I mean, it's even difficult for them though, because they got to do the grocery shopping or whatever else. But for people who have, you know, a normal life, but they've gotten into this mode of going to bed at three and getting up at 10, like, and then they're like, I have to shift this because I'm going to get a job now, or, you know, the doctor's appointment, they can only see me at 9 in the morning, never.
And you know what, there's some people, there's some genetic variation here. Mm-hmm. And it goes over the lifespan and also between different people. So in our lifespan, teenagers, and you might have heard this, that teenagers naturally want to go to bed earlier and wake up later. It's just a genetic thing. And that's actually good to facilitate that if possible. And, you know, some school districts are recognizing that and not starting school as early for, you know, for high school and that kind of thing. So there's this lifespan variation. And then there's also some people are night owls and some people are early birds. Mm-hmm. And there's just a genetic tendency toward that. And there's some like reasoning that it's evolutionarily helpful. Mm-hmm. So that a tribe of people out on the savannah, some people are awake at different parts of the night to be like guards.
Yeah.
You know, so some people take the early shift to go to sleep and some people take the late shift to go to sleep. And so if you're a night owl, you know, it's like then honor that and just like make it consistent if you can. And then like heaven help if you have to have a day job. It's like where you wake up early, you know, and in that case, I would probably, and you could do it, it's, you know, but, you know, I would imagine, you know, this person could do it, but I don't know. You know, it might work easier for them to do it a gradual shift. I truly don't know.
Okay. And then the other issue was, do you find a lot of people will say there's this magic, and it, you know, has to do with the Chinese medicine cycles maybe, but that, you know, getting to bed before midnight, the hours before midnight are more restful for us and restorative for us.
I think that's true for most people. Okay. And kind of like what I understand is that hour for hour, you get the deepest rest before midnight. I've definitely heard that, and for me, that certainly is the case. Mm-hmm. I don't like sleeping past when it gets light outside.
Mm. Okay. Yeah, it's hard when you're in a family and there's different, like I'll say, I'm on this rampage and I'm going to bed by 11 and I'm going to get up at 6 and I'm going to do this consistently. And then, you know, my husband's staying up till 1 and he's sleeping in, or my kids are home and then they're like, they're staying up and want to watch movies and have family time. And it's like, darn it. You know, it's really hard for me.
I know. Oh. One of the things, my wife and I really enjoy going to bed at the same time. It kind of facilitates each of our good habits.
Yeah.
And it can be challenging both.
It can be. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, cool. Who has questions? Has this been helpful, guys? You know, open up your line and just give Dr. Jim some feedback here.
This has been excellent. I really enjoyed it. I just have one question about the shift workers, you know, our policemen, our fire. In fact, I'm working with a group of firemen right now. Will your program help them with better sleep when they're sleeping, even though they have these crazy shifts?
Yeah. I think there's a really good chance, Janet. I think so. I would certainly give it a try. Okay, this is just reminding me. I'd like to come back to one more thing you can do to support your sleep, is absolutely get yourself reduce EMF exposure at night. And it's just, I can't tell you. It, it, being exposed to Wi-Fi, cellular, Bluetooth, that kind of stuff, it is stressful for your brain. It is just stressful. And we could, Rita Marie, I'd be happy to do a whole nother call with you about this stuff. Mm-hmm. But it's especially important when it's bedtime. And so what that means is keep your phone, put your phone in airplane mode a long way away from your head. Turn off the Wi-Fi, you know, I just turn it off, you know, like in your whole house if you can. You know, if other people are awake and using it, that's hard. But certainly reduce your Wi-Fi exposure as best you can. You want a sleep sanctuary. That includes remote controls for your, you know, for your TV or remote controls for your air conditioner, remote controls for whatever. If it can communicate from your hand to the air conditioning or to the light or to whatever, that Bluetooth frequency is going through your brain and it's having a deleterious effect that can affect sleep. So that's a whole nother piece that you can do to take away a stressor that can facilitate sleep. And then Janet, what made me think about that was, oh my goodness, it's like, you know, these, you know, emergency responders are surrounded by Wi-Fi and headsets. And, you know, it's like, oh my goodness. So they have, you know, some fire departments are now refusing to put cell towers on top of their buildings. But just the nature of the job being, you know, having to be in communication and the way these guys are wearing headsets and, you know, body cameras and all that stuff that's communicating everywhere, they have a very heavy EMF exposure. And so that's a general stressor, and brain time is a general de-stressor. So it can help. It might not, you know, so is that what we want in our life is reduce the stressors. Unless you're choosing it, you know, just because you want to strengthen yourself, like with exercise, reduce the stressors and enhance the de-stressors. So yes, I would certainly have, you know, have your fire people and your police people try it. Give them this link, you know, give them the free link. If it's okay with Rita Marie, you know, try it for a month.
Okay with you. Yeah.
Please. Yeah. It's okay with me.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that'd be awesome. That's a nice gift for them.
Right.
Yeah. What a great gift for them. I was going to ask too, because you have to be connected to the internet to do brain time. So if you're doing it at bedtime, how do we resolve that dichotomy of we're supposed to be in this, you know, Wi-Fi free environment, but now we have to have the Wi-Fi on to be.
Agreed. I recognize the issue.
Even if we're just downloading a version, you know, and downloading it again every 10 days or whatever.
Yeah.
It could be very helpful.
We will get to an app, and I think practically it'll hopefully be by year end.
Good. Yeah.
Not guaranteed, but.
Yeah. Right. Right. Otherwise you have to have a remote control to turn off the Wi-Fi, and then you have to, you know, I'm like sitting here going, how do I resolve this? Right. Okay. Good. Hannah Aura, did you have a question?
I do. And in a way you've answered it, but, I've had a number of concussions from car accidents starting fairly early, and they've never affected my sleep before. Mm-hmm. But the last car accident, which was 7 years ago, has drastically affected my sleep. I never had trouble going to sleep until this last car accident. And now instead of being asleep by 11, I don't even go to bed until like 4 because I'm not tired enough. And so I just wonder, I'd like to get back to going to bed at 11. It for many reasons, it was a better program for me. And I'm not exactly sure what you're saying about how to do it. Are you saying that I should listen to the brain time and do, each week try to do an hour earlier? I mean, my body now has developed a new pattern, which is to go to bed at 4.
That's right.
But I'm not happy with that pattern. I want to change the pattern.
Yeah.
So, because it's really interfering with my life in a lot of ways to go to bed so late.
Yeah. That's just a really good question, Shanora. I think for sure, the part for sure is listen to brain time. So just listen to that, and things might just start to shift, like without much effort. You know, it might. just as your brain gets back to its pre-injury state of before this last concussion, it might just automatically shift to be more in line with the light dark cycle in the external world, and you just find yourself wanting to go to bed earlier. That's a possibility, and then it might not. But as you listen to brain time, you're going to be able to build new habits more easily. And so building a new habit, whatever it is, whether it's your bedtime or, going to the gym or doing whatever it is, involves building new connections in our brain. So a habit is just something that's habitual. It's automatic. We don't have to think about it. Those are wiring connections in our brain. We can build new connections. We can shift habits more easily when our brain is flexible. It's just part of plasticity. You can build more connections when your brain is healthy and flexible. So you want to shift a habit, a body habit, of going to bed at 4 in the morning to going to bed more at 11. Yeah. Here's something, we could try is, number one, listen to brain time for a week and just see, just get used to it and build some more resilience. And then the following week, just have the intention of going to bed at 3 instead of at 4. And just, that's what you do. And you just, every night you're there and you just, it's going to take effort. I would imagine it might take effort. And it's like, I'm not tired. But then you do, your yoga stretches, you do your meditation, whatever you do, you take a hot bath, do whatever you do to help, to help set the stage for sleep, and just go there. And, even if you don't fall asleep, you could also, the way that a lot of people, cognitive behavioral therapy people do it, is you just set your time frame. And okay, then set your alarm for, whatever it is going to be 8 hours later. So if you go to bed at 3, set your alarm for 11, and then you just wake up even if you're not fully rested yet. If you would, use an alarm, you just shift it that way, and then shift it gradually and try it. After 1 week, you try going to bed at 3. After the next week, you try going to bed at 2:30. You set something gradual. That would be my suggestion. And, God bless you. I hope it works.
I have a couple of other questions.
One more thing. You might want to find somebody that can help you from a functional neurological perspective. And that could only benefit, make it easier for you.
Yeah. She's in Monterey. Do you know anybody in Monterey?
No. I don't. We can send you, Marie, we can send you a doctor locator.
Okay.
And then you can come up to Walnut Creek and see me. So.
I haven't been driving much since the concussion, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I'm doing neurofeedback to try to bring my brain back. And can I do the two together, or are they going to conflict?
No, they're great. They're fine together. We have a number of neurofeedback practitioners who use brain time and recommend brain time for their clients.
Great.
And then my last question is, what about time? I mean, is this something that you do for the rest of your life, for at least a year or two? Or how does it, do you have any feedback studies based on...
Different people use it differently. Sometimes, and it depends partly on your life circumstances. One is, the more stress you're under, it's like the more helpful it can be to help. It's kind of like a de-stressor, among other things. If there's been like a one-time kind of insult, like a stroke or a brain injury, a lot of folks will use it for, they'll use it for 2 or 3 months and get the recovery they want, and then they're done. It just sticks. Mm-hmm. Some people, I've really seen it all over the map. sometimes, you know, sometimes kids with ADHD will use it. They'll be a lot better. They'll stop. And then if they regress in like 6 months, they'll use it again for a month or 2 months. So you can kind of be, you can kind of like design it. I use it every day for the rest of my life. You know, I view it kind of like I exercise regularly. I brush my teeth. I do brain time. And it's something that is, you know, I have enough evidence, you know, for myself and seeing it around that I think it's just good general hygiene. It's just one of those brain hygiene things that I do. So, yeah, so you can use it. There's a lot of ways you can use it. And we have our whole subscription model is really flexible. You can stop and start whatever you want.
Great. So if you stop too soon, you just get on the bus again.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Make sure it works for you. And practically, I would try it for a month, see if you notice any benefits.
I will.
Yeah.
Thank you for offering that.
Oh, you're welcome.
Great. Thank you, Hannah. Or I was thinking of you as I was asking him that earlier. Oh. Figured out. And Donna, you mentioned about, did you want to ask something about your memory and cognitive from your concussion?
Who were you talking
to? Oh, Donna. Donna had mentioned.
Hi there.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't know. I've had a couple concussions and my memory is almost non-existent. And my cognitive is somewhat back. I still have some issues. But Dr. Marie had talked about how that would help me. And I was just wondering, like, how exactly will that help? It's not the sleep part of that. It's more of like during the day when I'm awake.
Yeah. So and there's a couple things that I think would be important. One is, and we talked about this a little bit earlier. If you've had a concussion, we really want to make sure that we're stopping an inflammatory cascade in your brain. And so inflammation just means, what does it mean? There's ongoing damage in your brain. And your immune system is geared up. In this case, it's the microglia in your brain, which is the kind of like your brain's immune system, are on alert and they're creating these chemicals, inflammatory cytokines, which interfere with signaling. They can definitely make it hard for you. It'll make you feel foggy headed and hard. It'll interfere with your memory and that kind of stuff. And so, there's a lot of different ways that you can do it. Things like turmeric and glutathione and these anti-inflammatory things, which I imagine, you've already covered but you want to make sure you've got those bases covered. Because they're, and that'll be lifelong. That'll just be a lifelong thing for you. There's this interesting in our bodies. Our brain is different than our bodies in terms of inflammatory processes. In our bodies, there's inflammation that comes and goes. So you have a bug and you get inflamed, or you have an injury, you get inflamed, but then the inflammation quells itself. It goes back to a pre-injury or pre-insult state. And your brain is not that easy. And so once your brain gets inflamed, there's a highly increased likelihood of your brain staying like primed for inflamed. And we use this word called primed. The neuroglia or the immune system in your brain is primed. And that's why repeated head injuries are so problematic. So you have one and then you're already primed for the next one. It takes a less of an insult. And so you've heard of this chronic traumatic encephalopathy for boxers and football players. And it's not just them. It's like anybody. And so we absolutely want to get that priming thing back as best we can under control. And so think, you know, glutathione, you know, liposomal, turmeric. And there's a number of things. So that's one. Okay. And then another is, The with brain injuries, there is a disrupted timing between the different parts of our brain. And that's how I got into this thing in the whole first, the reason that happens is that your brain is kind of like jello. It's soft. And if you have a brain injury, your brain bounces back and forth, and the little connections called axons get sheared or broken. And so, so then that's interrupting the connections between different parts of your brain, and then your brain has to do workarounds for it. It's very challenging for that functional connectivity that we worked around, that we talked about earlier. So that's, and brain time can be helpful. So try it. And then Donna, I want to make sure that when you do it, it's actually comfortable for you. And it might be, you know, given what's going on in your brain, you actually feel like you get tired after you do it for a while. Then what I want you to do is just do it 30 seconds. You know, just build it really gradual. Okay. So those would be the two things: reduce inflammation and then do this. And then like bonus points, if you can get to somebody who's trained to help you more, these two are really good starts. You know, these things that I'm telling you right now. And then you can, you know, find somebody who's trained to take it even further.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Awesome. That's interesting what Angelica wrote. When the power went out in California, positive side effect, we all got so tired and calm. It was really incredible, right? No more blue lights, no more EMFs. It's just like we're out in the country camping. Yeah. Which says something for taking those kinds of vacations time to time, is right. The unplugged, I went out to Brighton Bush Hot Springs, where I spoke at an event for Ocean Robbins. And, you know, the cabins were very dimly lit. There was no cell phones. There was no Wi-Fi. And it was just so beautiful to be out like that in nature for 3 days. You had to go outside to go to the bathroom and take a shower. And like, it was almost camping, but, you know, we got to sleep in these little cabins. But it made a huge difference on my own nervous system. I slept like a rock. I was in bed by 10:30, sleeping by 10:30 the next morning. Yeah. So there is something to be said for that, you know, for taking those breaks. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Lots we covered. Thank you so much. Anybody, last chance for questions or comments? The CPAP machines, Lynn Rose mentioned, those are, what are your thoughts on those?
Oh, use them. You know, like if you need it, absolutely use it. And then hopefully, I mean, there are some, you have to sleep. And you just really have to sleep. You know, if you're not sleeping, if you're having sleep apnea, it's damaging to your brain, your long-term health. You don't want that.
So you have to balance the Bluetooth and the, you know, if they are using Bluetooth, then you have to. We always have trade-offs in life, right? There's, you know, the double-edged swords, and sometimes we have to go, okay, which one am I going to do at this point? Which part of my body am I going to preserve? And, you know, with the sleep, it's important, and not breathing during sleep and waking up 15 times a night is not a good thing.
That's really important.
Yeah. It's a Fisher Wallace stimulator, and Dr. Otis said brain time was compatible with stimulator. Yeah. So I'm glad we got that question answered for Hannah Ora, because I've been mentioning this to her for a while, and she just wasn't sure, and her therapist wasn't sure either, because she wasn't familiar with brain time. So I'm glad we got that cleared up. Anything else, Mihaela? Yeah.
So if we want to address more than one issue, and so let's say sleep is 10 minutes ideally and focus is about 5 minutes, do we do 15 minutes or 10 minutes would do for both? Or is it different kind of sounds for different issues?
You know what's really interesting? If you do the sleep, and the sleep training, and in this case, I believe you're referring to, we have we have a focus training, a relaxed training, and a sleep training. If you do, you'll notice that the beeps are faster in focus and slower in sleep. And you know what's really interesting? If you do the focus training, it's going to help you sleep. If you do the sleep training, it'll help you focus. There are these there's this kind of these logarithmic progressions that happen in the brain that when you enhance one area, it tends to help the other area. So in one level, it almost doesn't matter. You can just do 10, if you want to improve your focus, you can get there by listening to sleep. So that's one answer. But then the other one is you can shift it. You can listen to focus one day or listen to focus in the morning and sleep in the evening. Mm-hmm. You can listen to, you know, the focus one like for a week and then the sleep one for a week. So it doesn't matter. There's no harm at all in listening to, you know, the sleep and the focus both. There's absolutely no harm to it. And some people find it pleasant. So it's kind of a personal choice.
Yeah.
And experiment and see what works well for you. And so, you know, if you're wanting more focus, and I heard that you do, you have multiple issues, you know, there's the sleep is so foundational. Yeah, it's like if you're not sleeping at night, you know, and if you don't have those slow brain waves being able to synchronize, then the foundation is off. And so generally, if you were going to choose one, I would say start with sleep. It's kind of like a foundational thing. I'm going to digress here a little bit at the risk of going too long, but, the slower rhythms in our brain that, you know, that we do with sleep and even slower than that, they're called default mode, the default mode network in our brain. They're more primitive. They're more foundational. And they're a great place to start.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, that's a great answer because people are going to find their rhythm with it. And it's how long is ideal for you? Which mode is ideal for you? Just mm-hmm. like when we talk to people about food, right? And food and exercise. And it's just, it's really nice that you have the opportunity to experiment with different modes, different timings, mm-hmm. and find what works the best. So. Appreciate it. I so appreciate you being here and sharing so generously with us and offering everybody the month of brain time to try it out, you know, and see if it works. And I encourage you all to use the link. It was drritamarie.com/braintime. We made it real easy for you to just click that and that'll get you into the free, the page where you can get it free for a month and just try it. Right? And ask questions, post to the Facebook group. You have a Facebook group there or something where they can post to while they're in there?
No. What I would suggest is write to support@braintime. Okay. And we'll get right back to you.
Okay.
Wendy will get right back to you. And then if she doesn't know the answer, I will.
I'll ask you. Okay, great. So you have the opportunity to get support to find out, you know, how to actually optimize it for your own situation. And I encourage you all to do it, you know, even if your sleep is fine. I mean, my sleep's fine as long as I get to the bed, right? But I'm going to try it because I think that organization of the memories and, you know, making sure that it's everything's really clear, not grasping for the words or somebody's name or whatever. It's kind of embarrassing when you can't remember somebody's name and you've known them for your whole life. And I'm like, what is that? And I never thought to go correlate it to, did I have a bad night's sleep? Have I been staying up too late the last few nights? Because it's, yeah. So thank you so very much for all you've done and all your generous answering of everybody's questions. And I appreciate it. And is anybody else interested in getting Dr. Otis back to talk about EMFs? Would that be something of interest? Yes. Well, we'll hook up with you and get it there. I want to do it after we've had people trying this out for a little bit so we can give you feedback as to how it's working. Okay?
Well, can I ask just one quick question? Is there a special kind of headset that you recommend or is it any headset?
Any headset. It does not have to be expensive or fancy. You can use earbuds. I mean, you just need to have like separate sounds in the two ears.
Okay.
Perfect.
Great question.
Yeah.
Great. Well, I've really enjoyed this, Rita Marie. It's really been fun talking with all of you. Just blessings to everybody. And this is great.
Great. We'll see you all later. We'll see everybody tomorrow. If you show up, I'm going to talk more about a couple of other things and then answer whatever questions y'all have. So bye-bye.
Stay healthy.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. Bye, everybody.
Thank you. Bye.
Welcome.
Thank you. Bye.